father kept in the lower drawer of his large desk an old and beautiful map of our city. It was a whole folio sheaf of parchment pages, which originally fastened with strips of linen, formed an enormous wall map, a bird's eye panorama. On that map, made in the style of Baroque panoramas, the area of the Street of Crocodiles shone with an empty whiteness that usually marks polar regions or unexplored countries of which almost nothing is known. The lines of only a few streets were marked in black, and their names given in simple, unadorned lettering, different from the noble script of the other captions. The cartographer must have been loath to include that district in the city, and his reservations found expression in the typographical treatment. In order to understand these reservations, we must draw attention to the equivocal and doubtful character of that peculiar area, so unlike the rest of the city. It was an industrial and commercial district, its soberly utilitarian character glaringly underlined. The spirit of the times, the mechanism of economics, had not spared our city, and had taken root in a sector of its periphery, which then developed into a parasitical quarter. While in the old city a nightly semi-clandestine trade prevailed, marked by ceremonious solemnity, in the new district modern, sober forms of commercial endeavor had flourished at once. The pseudo-Americanism, grafted on the old crumbling core of the city, shot up here in a rich but empty and colorless vegetation of pretentious vulgarity. One could see there cheap, jerry-built houses with grotesque facades, covered with a monstrous stucco of cracked plaster. The old shaky suburban houses had large, hastily constructed portals grafted onto them, which only on close inspection revealed themselves as miserable imitations of metropolitan splendor. Dull, dirty, and faulty glass panes in which dark pictures of the street were wavily reflected. The badly planed wood of the doors, the gray atmosphere of those sterile interiors, where the high shelves were cracked and the crumbling walls were covered with cobwebs and thick dust, gave these shops the stigma of some wild Klondike. In row upon row, there spread tailor's shops, general outfitters, china stores, chemist shops, and barber's saloons. Their large gray display windows bore slanting semicircular inscriptions in thick gilt letters: Confiscier, Manicure, King of England. The old inhabitants of the city kept away from that area where the scum, the lowest orders, had settled. Creatures without character, without background, moral dregs, that inferior species of human being which is born in such ephemeral communities. But on days of defeat, in hours of moral weakness, it would happen that one or another of the city dwellers would venture half by chance into that dubious district. The best among them were not entirely free from the temptation of voluntary degradation, of breaking down the barriers of hierarchy, of immersion in that shallow mud of companionship, of easy intimacy, of dirty intermingling. The district was an Eldorado for such moral deserters. Everything seemed suspect and equivocal there. Everything promised with secret winks, cynically stressed gestures, raised eyebrows, the fulfillment of impure hopes. Everything helped to release the lowest instincts from their shackles. Only a few people noticed the peculiar characteristics of that district. the fatal lack of color, as if that shoddy, quickly growing area could not afford the luxury of it. Everything was gray there, as in black and white photographs, or in cheap illustrated catalogs. The similarity was real rather than metaphorical, because at times, when wandering in those parts, one in fact gained the impression that one was turning the pages of a prospectus, looking at columns of boring commercial advertisements, among which suspect announcements nestled like parasites, together with dubious notices and illustrations with a double meaning. And one's wandering proved as sterile and pointless as the excitement produced by a close study of pornographic albums. If one entered, for example, a tailor's shop to order a suit of cheap elegance characteristic of that district, one found that the premises were large and empty, the rooms high and colorless. Enormous shelves rose in tiers into the undefined height of the room and drew one's eyes toward the ceiling, which might be the sky, the shoddy, faded sky of that quarter. On the other hand, the storerooms, which could be seen through the open door, were stacked high with boxes and crates, an enormous filing cabinet rising to the attic to disintegrate into the geometry of emptiness, into the timbers of a void. The large gray windows, ruled like the pages of a ledger, did not admit daylight, yet the shop was filled with a watery, anonymous gray light which did not throw shadows and did not stress anything. Soon, a slender young man appeared, astonishingly servile, agile, and compliant, to satisfy one's requirements and to drown one in the smooth flow of his cheap sales talk. But when, talking all the time, he unrolled an enormous piece of cloth, fitting, folding, and draping the stream of material, forming it into imaginary jackets and trousers, that whole manipulation seemed suddenly unreal. A sham comedy, a screen, ironically placed to hide the true meaning of things. The tall, dark sales girls, each with a flaw in her beauty, appropriately for that district of remaindered goods, came and went, stood in the doorways, watching to see whether the business entrusted to the experienced care of the salesman had reached a suitable point. The salesman simpered and pranced around like a transvestite. One wanted to lift up his receding chin or pinch his pale powdered cheek, as with a stealthy, meaningful look, he discreetly pointed to the trademark on the material, a trademark of transparent symbolism. Slowly, the selection of the suit gave place to the second stage of the plan. The effeminate and corrupted youth, receptive to the client's most intimate stirrings, now put before him a selection of the most peculiar trademarks, a whole library of labels, a cabinet displaying the collection of a sophisticated connoisseur. It then appeared that the outfitter's shop was only a facade, behind which there was an antique shop with a collection of highly questionable books and private editions. The servile salesman opened further storerooms filled to the ceiling with books, drawings, and photographs. These engravings and etchings were beyond our boldest expectation. Not even in our dreams had we anticipated such depths of corruption, such varieties of licentiousness. The salesgirls now walked up and down between the rows of books, their faces, like gray parchment, marked with the dark greasy pigment spots of brunettes, their shiny dark eyes shooting out sudden zigzag cockroachy looks, their over-intense coloring, like that of aromatic mocha, seemed to stain the books which they took in their olive hands, Their touch seemed to run on the pages and leave in the air a dark trail of freckles, a smudge of tobacco, as does a truffle with its exciting animal smell. In the meantime, lasciviousness had become general. The salesman, exhausted by his eager opportuning, slowly withdrew into feminine passivity. He now lay on one of the many sofas which stood between the bookshelves, wearing a pair of deeply cut silk pajamas. Some of the girls demonstrated to one another the poses and postures of the drawings on the book jackets, while others settled down to sleep on makeshift beds. The pressure on the client had eased. He was now released from the circle of eager interest and left more or less alone. The salesgirls, busy talking, ceased to pay any attention to him. Turning their backs on him, they adopted arrogant poses, shifting their weight from foot to foot, making play with their frivolous footwear, abandoning their slim bodies to the serpentine movements of their limbs, and thus laid siege to the excited onlooker, whom they pretended to ignore behind a show of assumed indifference. This retreat was calculated to involve the guest more deeply, while appearing to leave him a free hand for his own initiative. But let us take advantage of that moment of inattention to escape from these unexpected consequences of an innocent call at the tailor's and slip back into the street. No one stops us. Through the corridors of books, from between the long shelves filled with magazines and prints, we make our way out of the shop and find ourselves in that part of Crocodile Street where from the higher level one can see almost its whole length down to the distant, as yet unfinished buildings of the railway station. It is, as usual in that district, a gray day, and the whole scene seems at times like a photograph in an illustrated magazine. So gray, so one-dimensional are the houses, the people, and the vehicles. Reality is as thin as paper and betrays with all its cracks its imitative character. At times, one has the impression that it is only the small section immediately before us that falls into the expected pointillistic picture of a city thoroughfare, while on either side, the improvised masquerade is already disintegrating and, unable to endure, crumbles behind us into plaster and sawdust, into the lumber room of an enormous empty theater. The tenseness of an artificial pose, the assumed earnestness of a mask, an ironical pathos tremble on this facade. But far be it from us to wish to expose this sham. Despite our better judgment, we are attracted by the tawdry charm of this district. Besides, that pretense of a city has some of the features of self-parody. Rows of small, one-story suburban houses alternate with many-story buildings which, looking as if made of cardboard, are a mixture of blind office windows, of gray glass display windows, of advertisements and numbers. Among the houses, the crowds stream by. The street is as broad as a city boulevard, but the roadway is made, like village squares, of beaten clay, full of puddles and overgrown with grass. The street traffic of that area is a byword in the city. All its inhabitants speak about it with pride and a knowing look. That gray, impersonal crowd is rather self-conscious of its role, eager to live up to its metropolitan aspirations. All the same, despite the bustle and sense of purpose, one has the impression of a monotonous, aimless wandering, of a sleepy processing of puppets. An atmosphere of strange insignificance pervades the scene. The crowd flows lazily by, and strange to say, one can see it only indistinctly. The figures pass in gentle disarray, never reaching complete sharpness of outline, Only at times do we catch among the turmoil of many heads a dark, vivacious look, a black bowler hat worn at an angle, half a face split by a smile formed by lips which had just finished speaking, a foot thrust forward to take a step and fixed forever in that position. Showily dressed in long lace-trimmed gowns, prostitutes have begun to circulate. They might even be the wives of hairdressers or restaurant band leaders. They advance with a brisk, rapacious step, each with some small flaw in her evil, corrupted face. Their eyes have a black, crooked squint, or they have hair lips, or the tips of their noses are missing. The inhabitants of the city are quite proud of the odor of corruption emanating from Crocodile Street. There is no need for us to go short of anything, they say proudly to themselves. We even have truly metropolitan vices. They maintain that every woman in that district is a tart. In fact, it is enough to stare at any of them, and at once you meet an insistent, clinging look which freezes you with the certainty of fulfillment. Even the schoolgirls wear their hair ribbons in a characteristic way and walk on their slim legs with a peculiar step, an impure expression in their eyes that foreshadows their future corruption. And yet, are we to betray the last secret of that district? The carefully concealed secret of Crocodile Street? Several times during our account, we have given warning signals. We have intimated delicately our reservations. An attentive reader will therefore not be unprepared for what is to follow. We spoke of the imitative, illusory character of that area, but these words have too precise and definite a meaning to describe its half-baked and undecided reality. Our language has no definitions which would weigh, so to speak, the grade of reality or define its suppleness. Let us say it bluntly. The misfortune of that area is that nothing ever succeeds there. Nothing can ever reach a definite conclusion. Gestures hang in the air. Movements are prematurely exhausted and cannot overcome a certain point of inertia. We have already noticed the great bravura and prodigality in intentions, projects, and anticipation, which are one of the characteristics of the district. It is, in fact, no more than a fermentation of desires, prematurely aroused, and therefore impotent and empty. In an atmosphere of excessive facility, every whim flies high. A passing excitement swells into an empty, parasitic growth. A light gray vegetation of fluffy weeds, of colorless poppies sprouts forth, made from a weightless fabric of nightmares and hashish. Over the whole area there floats the lazy, licentious smell of sin, and the houses, the shops, the people seem sometimes no more than a shiver on its feverish body, the goose flesh of its dreams. Nowhere as much as there do we feel threatened by possibilities, shaken by the nearness of fulfillment, pale and faint with the delightful rigidity of realization. And that is as far as it goes. Having exceeded a certain point of tension, the tide stops and begins to ebb. The atmosphere becomes unclear and troubled. Possibilities fade and decline into a void. The crazy gray poppies of excitement scatter into ashes. We shall always regret that, at a given moment, we had left the slightly dubious tailor's shop. We shall never be able to find it again. We shall wander from shop sign to shop sign and make 1,000 mistakes. We shall enter scores of shops, see many which are similar. We shall wander along shelves upon shelves of books, look through magazines and prints, confer intimately and at length with young women of imperfect beauty, with an excessive pigmentation, who yet would not be able to understand our requirements. We shall get involved in misunderstandings until all our fever and excitement have spent themselves in unnecessary effort, in futile pursuit. Our hopes were a fallacy. The suspicious appearance of the premises and of the staff were a sham. The clothes were real clothes. The salesmen had no ulterior motives. The women of Crocodile Street are depraved to only a modest extent, stifled by thick layers of moral prejudice and ordinary banality. In that city of cheap human material, no instincts can flourish, no dark and unusual passions can be aroused. The Street of Crocodiles was a concession of our city to modernity and metropolitan corruption. Obviously, we were unable to afford anything better than a paper imitation, a montage of illustrations cut out from last year's moldering newspapers.